Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, everyone. This morning, we're talking crime fiction, and it's fashioned on true crime, so something different. It's one of the really best books I've read so far this year. It's called Hell of a Country. It's published by Queller Books. Great title about the country, of course, as well. And it's going to have you turning the pages. My name is Mike Nicol. I'm a crime novelist, a writing coach, and the author sitting opposite me of Hell of a Country is David Cornwell. Apparently, we bumped into one another some years ago at one of the UCT writing courses. Is that right, David? Before you say anything about that, David, this is his second book. The first one, Like It Matters, came out in 2016. He's now written this extraordinary thing. He's no ordinary oak. He does some interesting stuff, but I want him to tell you about some of that. So, David, briefly, your life now, the stuff that you do, and why 9-year gap between books?
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the introduction and so wonderful to be here. Why a 9-year gap between books? I wish I had a simple answer for that, but part of it is that I, between books, also co-wrote and co-produced a film. That's hard.
No,
exactly. Flimsy excuse, but I do use it. So that was part of it. There was also just, as I'm sure we'll get into, quite a lot of research involved in this book, which is not something I've sort of done before. Normally it's a much more purely kind of creative, sort of open-ended exercise for me.
But you're also a musician, are you not?
Yes. Sort of not playing live as much as I would as I'd like to at the moment, but we are focusing on doing some recording. So yes, also keeping busy with that.
Okay, now the book. This is an interesting one. You have based it on a real murder. The Scissors murders that happened here in Cape Town in 1974. Now, you probably weren't even born then. How did you come across this story, and why did you think it would make a good novel?
So I was casting about for a project idea after writing the first book and looking for something that would allow me to write more directly about South Africa and its history. And so I was sort of open, sort of receptive to maybe doing something that was based on a true story or at least kind of a historical story of some kind. And then, it's a bit of a long story, but it sort of came to me. My partner wanted me to write a stage monologue for her in which she was going to cut her hair live on stage, which is pretty cool. She's quite wild. So I suggested maybe a murder story could give a sort of credible a reason for you needing to change your appearance. And then she found it. And as soon as I learned about it, I just knew that this was the project because it did have that window into the time, the sort of the power dynamics of the story. I just think are so redolent of the Forster years. Such a great opportunity to write about that history. But it was also just such a compelling story, as a crime story. It just had a lot of juice.
Were there any other novels that had inspired you to do this sort of thing? Because it's not, as far as I'm concerned, it's not something normal. Normal writers sit down and it comes out of the cloud and you start writing it. But you've gone and looked for a subject and then decided to adapt it for fiction. This is quite challenging.
Yeah, it's actually not the kind of writing I normally read, and not something that I thought I would I would do. It sort of surprised me as well, I have to admit.
But you still went with it.
But I still went with it. And once then it starts becoming quite an interesting challenge because you're challenged on more than one level. The research was challenging, having to synthesize that was challenging, and then having to turn that into fiction became yet another challenge. So it became, I guess all books are sort of an exercise in problem solving, but this one was quite an involved, lots of problems to solve.
Right, and the research, what was that? Newspaper cuttings? I mean, I think there's been a book on it, and there's been a television series, was there, that it was part of?
No, I actually didn't see that. Damn. That would have been helpful. But yes, 100%. Reading sort of primary material from the time was helpful. But interestingly, like maybe not as... You know, it was a case that sort of scandalized the nation. And so it was reported in a very sort of sensationalistic way, you know, without a lot of sort of, you know, introspection as to like, you know, how might our society have created this crime. It was very much like sort of, you know, arm's length, like, you know, to sort of treated as like sort of a freak occurrence. So as helpful as that was to sort of get my, you know, get my head around the sort of mechanics of the crime and how it actually played out, a lot of the most useful research was actually reading Alex Laguma, looking at Billy Monk photographs, you know, some of the more artistic expressions of the time that I was able to find.
Because what you actually had to get to was the emotion that was within, particularly Lorraine, the main character who commits the murder. That's not easy to do. Mm-hmm. You had to put yourself into her position.
Absolutely. You know, there was this moment where I realized that to tell the book that I wanted to, or write the book I wanted to write, the characters had to become sort of mine, you know, based on real people, but they had to become mine. And yes, specifically with Lorraine, the overall challenge was... Yeah, not necessarily make her actions, you know, sort of palatable, but at least understandable, you know, given the distress she faces.
Okay, I think we can give a brief description of the book. Let me try that. It's four people basically that are involved. Lorraine, who is the lover who eventually does the killing. She has a handlanger called Alfie who helps her in this endeavor. She's having an affair with a man, and the man is married. The person who gets killed is the man's wife. Now, what you've done now is you've woven their voices into the story, and you've gone and broken with postmodern tradition and said, I'm quite at liberty to put these voices into a single paragraph and move from one voice to another. That was a brave thing to do. Why did you decide to do it?
Oh, it's such an excellent question. Thank you. So the first version of this book, believe it or not, was actually told entirely from Lorraine's point of view, that first draft. And I just hated that draft, you know? Like, it didn't work for me. There was something about it that just felt like I'm telling not only half the story, not even a quarter of the story, you know, as it went. So I sort of knew that in order to get the voices to sort of play off each other and draw out some of the contrasts and contradictions in the sort of political world of the book, I needed these voices on the page to sit next to each other. In terms of the style, I mean, I'm lucky. I've got a very brave publisher. I mean, they were okay with dispensing with apostrophe marks, you know, so that helps sort of put all the voices in a continuum, you know, so all action, thought, dialogue sort of all exists together in this sort of, you know, quite a...
It's what I would... This is not to put anybody off. I would call it poetic.
Thank you.
And I think that was, to me, seemed to be what you were aiming for, was to write actually what turns out to be a very long poem. Because it is so intricately meshed. And it was, I thought, Jesus, this is not an easy thing to do. You must have battled with some of this.
Yeah, you know, the book took a long time to write and a long time to come out into the world. And I might never have, although it was maybe frustrating at the time, I now look at it like I might never have that privilege again. So I really was able to go back, revisit the book numerous times. And I think that sort of tightly woven nature, I think just came from being able to work on it numerous times, for sure. Yeah,
because it has this kind of dreamlike quality to it. And sometimes when I was reading and I'd stop and think, well, you know, how have you managed to do this? And then I'd have to go back a couple of pages to see what you were doing. And I mean, you were also playing with time. I mean, time changes in the course of the book. Okay, it's set over 4 months. Understand that. But within that, people moved around in time.
Yes. Yes.
You were happy to do this.
I did it. And you know, after a while, what you said earlier about sort of how important the sort of emotional journeys of the characters are, I kind of, if that was working, I thought that the rest would sort of fall into step or sort of, you know, be, pass over to the reader well, yeah.
Okay. I knew nothing about the Scissors Murders, even though I was alive at the time. I went back and had a look. And you have followed the trajectory of that crime quite closely. Although this book seems dreamlike, it actually follows what happened in real terms.
Yes. So I would say the main changes are in terms of timeline. So to sort of really play up that dreamlike, almost maybe fugue-like sort of quality, I've condensed the timeline. But the mechanics of the crime, yes, I sort of kept intact. I think because there's just something so sort of kind of, you know, almost ludicrously sort of gothic about the sort of situation with Alfie, who's an amputee, who's sort of manipulated and enrolled by Lorraine. There's just something I thought very, dreamlike, nightmarish, I guess, that I was sort of important for me to preserve.
The interesting thing to me, too, is when you wished to comment on society or politics at the time, you changed from the past tense to the present tense. This clearly a very deliberate move.
Yes, I would say a lot of that is also maybe influenced by trying to bring a bit of a filmic quality to it. So, you know, there are sort of establishing shots, you know, where things are presented in the present tense and then there moves back to a past register. Yeah, I wanted to make a voice that was sort of very aware of the time period, you know, witnessing it and noticing it very attentively, but not of the time period. You know, there's this a bit of a gap there of interpretation. Like, you know, the voice can stay modern even if the time period is hopefully sort of quite faithfully described, you know, the 70s. Yeah.
And you do that very well. I must admit, you do that very well. There's an interesting character in the real story and in your story. In your story, his name is Steve Perry. And he has this Nazi pistol. Was that a deliberate reference? Because I don't think it was a Nazi pistol, was it? It was just an ordinary pistol. But is that a reference to past events?
Yes. Yes. Something about that him being surprised to hear that there were Nazis in the desert that his that Steve's father sort of encounters in the sort of in the book, and then. I really love that scene where he sort of puts on his dad's army clobber and it sort of prefigures, you know, right at the end of the book. And we learn that Steve then eventually has his time to go to war right at the end. So, yes, more just, to make these connections and just kind of let them. I think I do a lot of just like letting things hang without kind of over-explaining them, whether that's frustrating or not.
No, that was the right thing to do as far as I'm concerned. Okay, because it just gave this connection to some traumatic event in the past and it brought it suddenly into the present with this gun. And I mean, what happens with the gun, both in the book and in real life, is quite intriguing because, as we know, it's the Scissors Murder, so it's got nothing to do with the murder.
Absolutely. One of those, a bit of a, maybe like a red herring. It's quite interesting, obviously, to work from an existing story where you can, a quick Google will tell you, kind of like you said, sort of what the mechanics are of the crime means. As you know, you've got to find other ways of making it kind of, you know, a page turn or keeping it compelling. And for me, that was exactly using things like that, making these kind of interesting connections that are sort of imply some tension, and then also the emotional tracks, you know, as we go through.
Yeah. There's one of the most fascinating scenes for me was where Lorraine goes and meets with the wife, Suzette,
Sunette.
And did that happen in real life or was that entirely your imagination?
I don't know. I don't know under what circumstances or where or when they met, but they did, you know. So also part of the reason for me to condense the timeline and make it seem more like this, exactly like a bad dream, like a fugue, was that the story for me is bleaker and less, just like more unedifying over, as it actually played out over the course of 3 years, you know. And, you know, the real Susanna Magdalena van der Linde was... I don't want to say happy to play second fiddle, but sort of, you know, accepted. I mean, that quote was actually used in press at the time. She was, in this role of the cheated on partner for a number of years before her terrible end. So that's, for me, was kind of like a bleaker version of, you know, it somehow softens it to condense it and make it more like something that gets out of people's control.
Yeah. It's she comes across very well in the book. I mean, that's the interesting thing, is one has a great deal of empathy for her.
I'm so glad you said that.
She's got not that big a part compared to the others, but one is very empathetic with her and how she behaves. I mean, she behaves incredibly well, given the circumstances. Again, that must have been a difficult thing to get your head around.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. You know, it's it was difficult sort of setting forth with a character that you know is going to commit a violent act, even harder for someone who's going to suffer it, 100%. It was very difficult. I'm so glad you like her. She's my favorite character, even though she doesn't have the biggest role. I try to use as many tools as possible to sort of really bond the reader to her. So I find her scenes quite funny at times, the Sinet scenes. Obviously not the tragic one, but she's there's a kind of lightness to the character that I think serves to make the tragedy deeper when it unfurls.
Well, she seems to be the only adult in the book.
Yes. well put, yes.
I mean, her husband is a complete and utter... I won't use the word because it wouldn't be polite, but it's used often in America.
Yes.
He doesn't come out at all well from all sorts of perspectives. Yeah. But the other character that fascinates me the most is Alfie.
Yes.
I mean, how did you come across him? I mean, okay, I know he's real, but how did you evolve your version of him?
Yeah, so, you know, further to what I was saying earlier, just about how there was like a distinct lack of sort of, you know, psychological depth in the reporting at the time. I mean, wow, in the terms of, so the real life Martinez Cuckoo got no play, you know, in the media. I mean, even to the point, I mean, this sounds so naive, but I didn't realize that in apartheid, you know, so the official trial was, you know, the state versus Lenberg and another. Like the fact that, you know, names weren't even used. You know, if you were non-white, you didn't even kind of earn that, you know, privilege to be tried under your own name. So it was very much like left to me to invent this character. And I took a lot of inspiration from, you know, Richard Reeve and Alex Laguma, who I think wrote The Colored Experience so compellingly in, you know, obviously Buckingham Palace, and A Walk in the Night is the maybe my favorite ever South African book. So I was so grateful to be able to be quite directly inspired by that, that work. Yeah,
I don't want to dwell on the murder itself, but it's a very difficult scene to have written. Did you battle with that? Did it take you a long time?
Yes, a very long time. And you know what also inspired that was that I read parts of a lot of books where I knew that there was a violent, you know, like that was based around a murder. And I kind of looked at different ways that other people had tried it. And the one thing I knew quite early that I wasn't going to do that, oh, she blacks out, comes to, there's blood everywhere, and she doesn't, like, I really thought, no, if you're going to do this, you need to try and stay with her through the act. And yes, not that in any, of course it doesn't in any way kind of condone the crime or anything, but I hope it feels like, yeah, this is where this character is right now, you know, when it happens.
Okay. Yeah. One last thing, if we can, and that is, there's another character in this whole drama, and that is Cape Town. You've managed to get that scene as we go out of winter into spring. The wind comes up. Cape Town is just at its kind of grittiness. You've spent a lot of time here, clearly.
Yes.
Were you born here or...?
No, I lived here for 8.5 years though, and so yes, and I saw Damon Galgut yesterday, and I was just telling him I now live in Joburg, and immediately when I'm back in Cape Town, there's something very cinematic about this city. I've always found that. I don't know what it is, but I can see stories playing out in these streets. They seem to suggest themselves to me. So thank you for saying that. And it was part of the project to have Cape Town, you know, figure as a character, and particularly Cape Town at a time of, you know, particularly violent dispossession. You know, this was when a lot of the forced removals were happening. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you've also caught the lingo, so it sounds like Cape Town. Not only looks like Cape Town, it sounds like Cape Town.
Yeah. No. Well, thank you. And I also have definitely my publishers to thank for some tightening up of some of that lingo right up until the last proof. So I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah.
David, thank you so much for chatting today. The book is called Hell of a Country. It's just out. Now's the time to go and buy it because it's going to fly off the shelves. It's a really good book. Oh. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.